Welcome to Truth Behind Travel Podcast. I'm Dolores Semeraro, and this is my weekly show, where tourism, travel, and hospitality industry professionals meet to discuss and share marketing strategies as they reshape the future of travel. If you want to learn the truth directly from the leaders and the doers of this industry, you are in the right place. Before you dive into today's episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. And while you're on it, go on and follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at Truth Behind Travel Podcast. Welcome to Season 3, my dearest podcast lovers. I cannot believe this podcast has come so far. From the very first episode with the Managing Director of the Maldives Tourist Board, across other episodes with guests from the likes of Google's and Expedia and other giants of the hospitality industry, to the lesser known but equally instrumental tourism professionals. We have contributed to tourism recovery episode after episode. Today, season 3 starts on a very different note. And I'm not saying we're done with travel recovery. People are traveling again. Travel restrictions across the world are dropping, yes. Everything seems to be going back to normal. So my question is, do we want normal? Or do we take this as an opportunity to reshape the future of travel? I'm all in for the second, if you ask me. That's why Season 3 is dedicated to those tourism, travel, and hospitality professionals who are taking this as an opportunity to create a more inclusive and sustainable future of travel. And if you are navigating exactly these waters and picking up where you left off 2 years ago just doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel enough, and you need a fresher and more focused approach to your tourism and hospitality marketing strategy, head over to the show notes and book a free assessment with me. For a very limited period of time, I'm gifting 10 free sessions, one-on-one, just you and me, to help you with a free assessment of your tourism marketing strategy, so you know where to pick up. Head over to the link in the show notes and book your call now. Let's get started, shall we? My guest today is coming back to the show after quite some time. He originally joined us during season 1 to talk about the wellness and healing holidays side of things in his own home country, Sri Lanka, a country that was just getting back on its feet after 2 years of lockdowns and zero tourism, when yet another challenge for the destination put this country under the global spotlight, but for the wrong reasons. Earlier this year, the Sri Lankan civil protests led to a complete change of government leaders and their policies. Today, Sri Lanka is a peaceful island, working hard behind the scene to regain market share and, most importantly, travelers' trust. My guest today played a key role across the tourism board in Sri Lanka to support and advise the leaders of the tourism ministry on the way forward. Join me as I welcome back to Truth Behind Travel Podcast the chairman of Jetwing Hotels and Resort, Mr. Hiran Kore. Welcome back to season 3 of Truth Behind Travel Podcast. I'm so happy to have you back here on the show, not just because we are going to talk about real life facts that are happening as travel restarts in many destinations around the world, but because today I have with me a very special guest that is coming back to the show to share some news and some truth and some light to the events that are happening and that have happened in his destination, Sri Lanka. I'm so glad to have you back. Welcome back, Hiran Kore. How are you?
Thank you, Doris. Thank you very, very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure always to talk to you, and I'm very happy to be on the show with you.
Around the world, media have covered the events that have happened in the country.
Yes.
And many of, especially in the tourism industry, have halted or paused the selling of Sri Lanka as a tourism destination. I would like to start this conversation by talking about the people and the impact that what has happened has had on the workforce of the tourism industry in Sri Lanka. How are the people?
I mean, thank you for asking this question to start with, because what went through, in Sri Lanka in the last 4 to 5 months, to be very honest with you, was very sad and embarrassing, because it's not only tourism, the entire country faced a massive balance of payments crisis. The country couldn't pay the foreign borrowings that we had. Therefore, then ran into a situation where we couldn't pay for the petrol and the diesel and the cooking gas. So it was really a tough time for the people. And so the people got on the streets, innocent people, men, women, children got on the streets demanding for their rights. So that is what led to a struggle, which led to the ouster of the political leaders. And now we have a new set of, we have a new president and a prime minister. And, the government is now very focused on getting Sri Lanka, the people, out of this situation. So therefore, not for tourism, for us in tourism, it was a kind of a triple whammy. I mean, first we had the Easter Sunday bombings, and then the COVID, and then this. So this was like really a tough time for us. We survived because the government also gave us a moratorium, so we did not have to pay the loans back immediately. We are now started to pay back from the month of July onwards. And then we also had a fair amount of business within Sri Lanka. The Sri Lankans traveling to our hotels to stay in the hotels. So that way we were able to keep most of the associates working with us, and they are still working with us. We lost a few, mainly to Qatar for the Football World Cup happening over there. They have taken some of our staff on a short-term contract, I think a six-month contract, and we hope they will bring the dollars back and that they will come back to Sri Lanka again after that. But there is no shortage of staff. There are people. All the hotels are in operation. The restaurants, the bars are in operation. At the last month, that is the month of August, we had about 45,000 tourists coming to the country. So it's not at all zero tourist arrivals. So that was with all the travel advisories, we had 45,000 coming in. And from September onwards, we expect the numbers to slowly increase. And we are on our way towards recovery. So I'm very happy that you chose to talk to me today on a day that, we are now really getting out of the situation, and most of the countries have taken the travel advisories, relaxed them, and we are ready to welcome tourists back.
Many countries have started to relax their travel recommendations and or travel ban towards Sri Lanka, particularly the UK. So what are the destinations? Where are the tourists coming into Sri Lanka from? Where are they from?
Well, from Europe, the number one market in the last couple of months was Spain and Portugal. That was a surprise for us as well, which was not a main market for us in the past. And they really, the Spanish and the Portuguese travelers came here. And then, of course, a few British, despite the travel advisory, a few Germans as well. And we had quite a number from Australia coming in because international cricket happened here in the month of June. So the Australian cricket team was playing here, and then Australian cricket supporters came, and that gave a big boost to that. Then the Pakistan cricket team came here as well. So that all that helped to show the world that things are happening. And the Middle Eastern market is coming back. And as I speak, Indian market is making a lot of inquiries. In the month of September, we'll see the Indians return to Sri Lanka with a lot of flight connections from all the main cities in India. We expect France, Germany, England, Italy to bounce back again from this month onwards.
And this is what happens when a destination is heavily reliant on a specific target market, for example, Europe, as such as for UK, France, Italy, Germany. And when these countries take a very firm and sometimes too harsh sort of position towards the events that are happening in yes. a specific destination, like, for example, what has happened in Sri Lanka. Suddenly that target market dissolves. It doesn't happen anymore. And the destination finds itself sort of naked, sort of uncovered by like, okay, how do we fill these hotels? Where do we get the people from? And that's when you have to diversify your destination strategy so that you can appeal to different type of nationalities, different cultures. Like you mentioned, the UAE, completely yeah. different culture, completely different priorities when it comes to travel, right? What is the perception of the destination right now? So when we look at the most... you know, most traditionally the European market, we know what Sri Lankan stands for, what are the values of the destination, what to expect. So when it comes to promoting it now, after all that has happened, where is the destination pushing to? So what are the things that they want to put forward with even new markets in this case?
So you mentioned UAE. I mean, you know, for them, the attraction is not necessarily the beach, but the mountains, the wildlife parks, the hill country is there, you know, what they like to do. And I mean, as you know, Sri Lanka is a very green country. We have shades of green as you drive through our, you know, paddy fields to the forest, to the coconut plantations and the rubber plantations, tea plantations, different shades of green you will see. So they love that. And for them, the colder climate in the hills is what attracts them. And then, of course, we have the Indian traveler who's probably a shorter stay, maybe 2 nights, 3 nights, but they are looking for, you know, to be in Colombo. Or, I mean, Colombo is now becoming a very attractive city with, you know, better nightlife, better quality restaurants and other entertainment facilities, so on. So, and the shopping. So, Indians would spend more time in Colombo and maybe Nigambo. They do have destination weddings. We've also introduced some other exciting tours, which is off the beaten track, you know, like going on to the east coast of Sri Lanka, which was hardly promoted as a tour destination. Like if you go to, let's say, Arugam Bay or Portugal, and from there you will see Kumana National Park, which is Yala Block 5, actually. And that's a great place for, you know, leopard and elephant watching and crocodiles and so on. So therefore, that's another new area. So we are now introducing different tours. Even for the traditional market, they can see different areas and you know, get attracted to come again and again to the country.
These are the things that when the destination tourism board promotes towards a specific market, instead of going one strategy all out, they need to diversify what has been promoted towards what market, what appeals to that specific market. And in that sense, having a personalized, sort of a customized strategy when it comes to regenerate interest, right? When it comes to becoming appealing again. Because you can't go to the UAE markets with the same strategy that you're using in Europe, for example. The perception of the destination will be different. So my question, you know, I've been thinking about it. I wanted to ask you, there's so much interest around Sri Lanka as a destination, but also there's a lot of mystique. There's a lot that is not known about the destination itself. Like, for example, think of Maldives, island, tropical, beaches, fantastic weather, but Sri Lanka has an element of mystique around the country, around the destination. And with that, although it can be romantic at the times, it can also generate false perception and also false myth around the destination. So if there is, for example, something that you know it's false about Sri Lanka, but people think it is outside, and you're here to, for example, to break that myth, to say, no, this is not true. So what is it that we can share that people, you know, the most common mistake that people think of Sri Lanka, but they are not true?
Number one is safety that comes to my mind, because when you travel to a destination, safety now comes number one, right? And a lot of people think now Sri Lanka is not safe. And I can tell you very, very openly, Sri Lanka is absolutely safe. This struggle that the people led, it was just common people, housewives, elderly men, women, children who led it for a particular purpose. It was not led by any politician or anybody like that. No terrorist groups involved, nothing. It's just simple struggle to get what they wanted. They got what they wanted. In the meantime, unfortunately, we had some issues where some of the houses were burned of politicians. They were not of individual people, no businessmen involved, no professionals involved. It was a targeted attack on some of the people whom the people didn't like. And that happened. And now, once again, no more emergency in the country. No more restrictions of travel. There is enough of diesel, petrol available for everybody, not only for tourists, for everybody to travel, go about. So the safety factor, I think, is number one. Number two, some people ask me, and I'm sure you have heard also, about food scarcity. Now, there is absolutely no scarcity of food in the country. There's enough food prepared within Sri Lanka, grown in Sri Lanka, available. However, I have to say, imported items of some food is not available. Say, for example, steak from Argentina is not available. Or salmon from Alaska or Scotland or Norway is not available. But or the cheese from Switzerland is not available. But you're not coming for 2 weeks to Sri Lanka to eat any of that. So that's the kind of thing that's now people are asking, what if we come? Will we be eating your food? And will your people have no food? Absolutely not. There is enough food for the people to eat. And then there'll be enough food for the tourists to eat as well and enjoy. So these are the two main things that people keep asking, should we come? Will we be intruding on your space? Not at all. When you come, you will contribute your dollars. You will use your dollars, which will help us to overcome the balance of payments crisis the country is going through. And also, 2.5 million Sri Lankans depend directly and indirectly on tourism. So you spending your money here is a great way of helping us. And the third reason to come is you are getting into a destination with very few tourists at the moment. So you will have all the beautiful national parks, the cultural sites, the religious sites, literally to yourself. And so this is the best time to come. And I can't think of a better time to invite people back into our country.
Unfortunately, recently, Sri Lanka was top of the mind, but for other reasons, and reasons that are very, very harmful, and they damage the perception of the destination. And people, as you said, think that Sri Lanka is not safe, but actually it's not true. Now is the safest time to go to Sri Lanka because there's a lot of control. There's a lot of patrolling or checking the country, and the government of the country wants the country to be stable and peaceful within, so that from the outside, it shines through that safety. And also food, as you mentioned, who says that we need to have that salmon or that steak from Argentina, for example, that you said? Why? Sustainable tourism today dictates that we don't need to fly over that type of food into a destination that already has so much food richness and flavors, right? And actually appreciate those, not because there is nothing else, but because it is what it that's why you're traveling there. It's almost like, why are you traveling to Sri Lanka and go and eat another, something that you could eat in Paris? So I think we should take this as an opportunity, right? I mean, for the operators, how are they changing their way of managing hotels, or how are they making this more cost effective?
Well, I think company like us, we took this decision 7-8 years ago because of exactly what you said on the sustainability front, on the food miles, transportation of things. So we stopped, serving most of these items anyway. Now, the Hotels Association of Sri Lanka also are encouraging more and more of our hotel partners to do away with serving imported items and to focus on serving more Sri Lankan items. And once you get that confidence to serve what we have, I think, you know, as you said, more and more will serve that, and the people will come and enjoy what Sri Lanka offers on that front.
You know, we spoke about the perception of the destination, you know, how people feel about Sri Lanka. So this is what it's felt outside the country. Now let's look inside the country. What has been done to bring this country up back again into the tourism spotlight? What is the Tourism Board of Sri Lanka working on? And, you know, what will be that tone of voice of brand Sri Lanka? You know, what would that stand for?
Well, I think from a promotional point of view, they will once again start, you know, the promotional activities, positioning Sri Lanka as, you know, as a diverse small island, offering the beaches, the mountains, the culture, the history, wildlife parks, all of that. And then on a more short, medium-term plan, looking at all the services that we provide, the guiding, the entrance areas, the wildlife areas, to see, you know, if there are any shortcomings on those fronts, to get those fixed. So there'll be a two-pronged attack. One is promoting, and the other is developing the product as well.
And in terms of hotel offerings, especially in terms of management companies, are international brands coming into Sri Lanka to operate more and more hotels?
Yes, we have now quite a number of international brands. The Hilton brand has been there for a very long time. Taj, which is regional, but Taj is in Sri Lanka in a big way. Marriott Hotels have, you know, our position now. Hilton has some other, there's a Conrad Hilton to be opened soon. A Double Tree, a couple of Double Trees are to be opened soon as well under the Hilton banner. Shangri-La, for example, has invested heavily in Sri Lanka into properties. Aman are here. So we do have international presence. Hyatt was supposed to open a hotel and it's still under planning at the moment. So all these are happening with, of course, the regional brand or local brands like ours.
So when these international brands come into the country, they bring their own budget in, of course, bringing that international branding strength to support the destination under that brand umbrella. How does it work then for the local operators and all these beautiful, absolutely stunning boutique properties and boutique right. brands that really deliver the essence of Sri Lankan hospitality?
Well, I mean, tourism is for all dollars. I mean, you know, there are some who when you will seek an international brand, as you said, and for them, they know exactly what they will get. This is the standard of a Marriott hotel. This is the standard of the service, the food, everything is there. And that's a given. Whereas there are Sri Lankan brands, which is uniquely different, which offers more Sri Lankan flavor, all of that. So some travelers will want to experience that. And then don't forget the homestays and the, you know, the smaller guest house operators, the individuals who rent a room, there is space for them as well now. I mean, a lot of people like to have that real authentic experience. To be honest with you, even if you stay in a Jetwing hotel, you are staying still in a hotel, not in a house. Whereas sometimes if you have the opportunity to stay with a Sri Lankan family, just share a room with them and to have a meal with them, well, that's a unique experience. And some travelers seek that as well. So there is space for all three, the international brands, the local brands, as well as the, you know, those who have no brand whatsoever, but just a room or two in the house. So I like that very much because tourism is for all, as I said, even in Sri Lanka, 2.5 million people depend on tourism directly and indirectly. So when you come, whether you stay in a branded hotel, international or local, or you stay in a guest house, you still are helping the country in a big way.
Considering that flying to Sri Lanka itself is already a long-haul travel, regardless where you're coming from, unless you're traveling from neighboring countries like India, for example, But how sustainable, apart from arriving into the country, how sustainable actually is to travel across Sri Lanka?
Actually, my favorite form of travel right now is by train, because unfortunately, we still don't have electric trains in our country. We still have diesel-powered trains, but still, the trains are running for the local communities. Right there, they travel from Colombo to Jaffna, Colombo to the south coast, Colombo to the hill country, Colombo to the east coast, everywhere. And I think that's the cheapest and the most sustainable way to travel. And also, you see the beautiful country as well. If that's not possible, then of course, you have to get into a, maybe a bus. There is a very good bus network now. Introduced in Sri Lanka. Slow travel, maybe without rushing in from A to B every day, you can do slow travel as well. So then that you slow down your, mileage, you lessen your mileage on a daily basis as well. Still, Sri Lanka is very focused on the sustainable factors of the, sustaining communities as well as the environment. There are very strict guidelines that we have to follow. So luckily, all those still stand for the good of the people and good of the country.
A lot has changed in the country over the past few months. And if you look at, as a last question for me, and I know you, I know you as a man of values and vision, and you've given so much to the country, to the industry. You are a very respected figure in Sri Lanka, an authority when it comes to tourism, a pioneer. But you also maintain that groundness. You're like, you're true. Your values are strong. Your family is with you. The company reflects these values. What do you see in the future of Sri Lanka?
I see a very bright future for Sri Lanka. Because I think finally the people spoke with their feet, actually, and told the politicians that, they cannot con anymore. There is much more focus on doing the right thing, not to be like a crab in a boiling pot. So tourism, the export sector, all those sectors that are contributing to the Sri Lankan economy will be much more focused, much more driven. And I think a lot of good will come out of it. And that's the way I see it. And of course, with the help of the international travelers, everybody else.
Thank you so much. This was a fantastic conversation. I hope it has helped a lot of the listeners to understand a little bit better of what's going on in Sri Lanka right now and to, wash away some of the false perceptions of the destination. Bring in some facts, bring in some truth to the table. And if you would like to share the last few words, just to say goodbye and leave a message for Sri Lanka, what would you say?
Please come and visit us, help our country and enjoy. I mean, it's not just helping. You help yourself by traveling and having a good time. And with that, we say, Ayubowang and may you live long.
Thank you
very much, Dolores, for giving me this opportunity to speak to you once again.
Pleasure. Thank you and be well. Thank you for listening to the newest episode of Season 3, bringing you the truth behind travel to Sri Lanka today through the wise words of Hiran Kore. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you're listening from. And write a review sharing your thoughts and feelings about this podcast. And you know what else you can do? If you know someone who would enjoy listening to this episode, go on, take a screenshot or the link of this episode and share it with that person. See you soon again next week for another episode of Truth Behind Travel podcast with me, Dolores Semeraro, and another brilliant podcast guest.